You're listening to URN's second special Course Cuts broadcast. This episode was originally broadcast on Wednesday, May the 20th, between 5 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Live.
Hello, I'm once again Louis Bailey.
So I'm Noam.
My name is Robert O'Connor.
Online.
I'm here with University Radio Nottingham.
Welcome back to another episode of The Pulse.
Recording for URN for The Pulse.
And on your radios.
And I'm interviewing Peter, who is the social media manager for UCU.
Regarding our university's decision to cut modern foreign languages and music.
An interview with the mayor of the East Midlands, Claire Ward.
You're listening to Pulse News at URN.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a very special episode of Pulse News at URN. I am your host, Robert O'Connor, head of news, coming to you live from the studio. Today, I am joined by Jamie. Hello, Jamie.
Hello, Rob.
And Ollie. Hello, Ollie.
Hello, Rob.
Well, we have an absolutely cracking one for you today. We are actually doing a two-hour special on the strikes, which have begun as of today, which are being conducted in protest at the Future Nottingham 2 plan, which is a series of proposed cuts and redundancies that the university has put out as part of a wider programme of essentially trying to bring the uni back to making a profit. However, critics argue that their approach has been far too severe, and so we're going to be going into a very deep discussion of it today. We've got plenty to talk about in about 10 minutes' time. We're going to be joined by a special guest for an interview, for a bit of a conversation. And then in the second half of the show, we will be breaking down essentially the sort of lead up to this point, what some comments from some other sort of major figures within the union and within the faculties and that kind of thing, and perhaps what the larger ramifications will be. So make sure to stay tuned. It's going to be an absolutely fascinating one. Now, I feel in this section, because we don't have too much time until our wonderful interview begins, I wanted to sort of start maybe on a more anecdotal note, in that I was wondering how these strikes, how these cuts might be affecting us three as students in the room. So I'll pass it to you first, Jamie.
So I emailed the head of the School of Physics last Tuesday, Professor Mark Fromhold. And I asked him whether or not the industrial action and the potential redundancies for the School of Physics, of which I'm a member, will impact my module choices for my third year, 2026-27. Professor Fromhold could not confirm or deny that they would be affected. That's because the entirety of the academic staff at the School of Physics has been put onto redundancy notice. That is 600 people. Wow. A lot of administrative staff have also been told that they might be facing the axe as part of the 2,700, I think, is the university-wide number. So for me, it's added to a bit of uncertainty at a time where, quite frankly, my year doesn't really need it, nor does any year in our school. I have 5 exams. Some have 7, 8. Mm-hmm. I know third years who have 9. There's a lot of uncertainty now that they face, because the further you get on in the School of Physics, the more specialised the modules become. And that means you need specific teachers for these modules. Now we don't know if, commencing in September 2026, whether the staff that teach these modules, the staff that you selected these modules for, will even be here.
Yeah.
So will these modules be running? And as Professor Fromhold said in his email, he can't confirm that. He can't confirm how it will impact people's ability to progress to the next year, to graduate. And I'm sure that's a theme across many schools because of the marking boycott. So the idea that this doesn't affect STEM as much, it needs to be eliminated. And that is a thing within STEM students' head, that this is a situation that's affecting arts and humanities more. It is not. It is also affecting us. And in the future, beyond Future Nottingham 2, whatever the university's next plans are, who's to say what is on the table?
Yeah, no, very well put. Ollie, how are these going to affect you?
Well, I also do a STEM degree, as you may all know. I do chemistry. I came to Nottingham primarily because it's a world-renowned institute. About 20 years back, as we'll discuss later with the interviewee. We're the only university to have, the only chemistry department in the country to have ever come between Oxford and Cambridge on the rank tables, right? now we are at risk of losing the best professors who teach chemistry in the country, in my opinion.
In the world, probably.
Absolutely, in the world. I can't name any specific names, but I do know for a fact that that there are certain professors who are world-renowned that are at risk. And I had an interview today with Tony Padilla, who you may know from Numberphile and 60 Symbols. He told me that he was looking at just sort of seeing what's out there in terms of jobs.
Yeah.
The only job available to him is in China.
Do we have a guest?
Yes, I believe our interviewee is
amazing. Here. Amazing. Okay. We'll go to a very brief song break and we'll be right back.
University Radio Nottingham.
And I'm delighted to announce that we are back and we have been joined by the wonderful Sam Tang. Welcome, Sam.
Hello.
It's lovely to have you here, and we're going to be, I think, diving straight into the old details of the strike and that kind of thing. Ollie, I'll pass to you.
Yeah. So I am delighted today to be joined by Sam Tang. Sam is a technical specialist in outreach for the School of Chemistry. You may know her more famously from the periodic videos on YouTube, presented by Martin Polykov, world famous. If you're into chemistry at all, you know of this YouTube channel. You've seen Sam. You know her voice. Before we begin, I would like to read out an open letter, a statement rather, that I received yesterday from Peter License, who is the head of the School of Chemistry. He said, "We are shocked and saddened to learn of the implications of the recently announced future Nottingham proposals for our school. We remain actively engaged with the university through the consultation phase to minimise the impact on our students and staff. Our aim is to continue to provide excellent teaching and to provide our internationally leading research portfolio." Now, that's quite a big thing. I think now we should move into the interview. Sam, I've introduced you, but would you like to introduce yourself first? Who are you? What do you do? What's your background?
Sure thing. And thank you, Oliver, for reaching out to us staff in chemistry. So I've got quite a bit of skin in the game. So I came to Nottingham on the 19th of July, 2004. Wow. I mean, were you even born then?
Yes. I was 2003. But not Jamie.
Awesome.
I'm a baby.
So, yeah, it's been quite an interesting journey. So, yeah, coming up to 22 years at Nottingham. I came here straight after my PhD. I was at a little-known university called Keele. Very different from Notts in terms of the size of what is it that they like using here at senior management? The size and shape of our staffing. Very different. So, I mean, Keele's got its own lake. Keele's got its own like nice grand hall, but the campus is glorious. It's set on top of the hill. It's got its own microclimate. It's gorgeous. But I went there because it does dual honours. So I did undergrad biology and chemistry, and then I decided that actually chemistry was where it was at. It was my passion, and so I stayed to do the PhD there. And I've been very fortunate that I got the job here at Nottingham on a temporary contract, and then here I am still after all this time. And originally I started off doing just schools outreach and public engagement with science, which is a fantastic line of work. Every single day is different, and you get to meet so many amazing kids, people, anyone who's willing to listen to me advocate STEM subjects. Yeah, why not? And then it's since 2019 that I moved into teaching undergraduate labs. So first and second year undergrads, which is how I know Oliver. Yep. And essentially it's great because then I could flex that chemistry background that I obviously still have. And it means then that, you know, I feel more like I'm one of the boots on the ground. I can see more of the value in what the university does in terms of like teaching our undergraduates and just keeping up to date with pedagogy and engaging with our students and hearing their amazing stories, their backgrounds, their career aspirations, everything like that. And so it's kind of, for me, it's like from that first moment they walk through in, you know, freshers week, welcome week, right through to graduation, there's nothing that beats that feeling. Nothing that, you know, seeing that person on that journey and beginning their career, it's like one of the most satisfying feelings any educator can have. And I think that is one of the myriad of reasons why people work at university and teach and do what I do. I mean, I'm not what I call a proper academic at all. You know, I'm a technician, I'm a technical specialist, but I can certainly feel that that is one of the aspects that the, you know, the academics, why they feel so passionately and so strongly about what is happening right now, because of the love of the game, because they love teaching undergraduates and postgraduates so much.
Yeah. I don't think you can understate your impact on anyone that you've taught. There's no possible way. Obviously, just hearing you speak just now, you can tell how enthusiastic and how much you love what you do and your job. Actually, I think you were the person that handed me my first lab coat last year.
So, like, that's great.
No, you know, I you're pretty central in my journey as a chemist, and the fact that you're now at risk is heartbreaking to me. So what can you tell us about the plans for FNTech Future Nottingham 2, specifically around chemistry, but on a broader scale, STEM rather, mate, but chemistry, STEM, what can you tell us?
So this is it. It's one of those where, as a member of staff, I should stress, and I'm going to deliberately speak in a very weird tone of voice, we should stress that the university has stated that these are proposals, and they're at pains to also emphasise that we are being still consulted on all of this. For me, I find the term, you know, consultation interesting. Normally consultation involves, you know, dialogue, discussion, possibly debate, before 2,700 letters are sent out across the university telling your staff they're at risk. But maybe that's just my take on what consultation should mean. So it's a difficult one. Obviously, my opinions, again, full declaration, because I really don't want to get fired. Full declaration, you know, I am mindful that what's going on in chemistry should not be pitted against other departments. This is a poo show of a magnitude that I cannot begin to describe. And there are other departments that are worse off. There are other departments that may be seen to be better off. But the consensus is that it's just awful. Mm-hmm. It's just terrible. And so what I can reflect on, what I can describe, and what I can emote is actually, yeah, what is going on in chemistry right now. What I can say is that in terms of the technical staff in chemistry, every single member of the technical team, whether you're working in the workshop, whether you're a member of the teaching staff, whether you're a research technician, every single technician has received an at-risk letter, which is horrendous.
And I would just like to say, for a bit of context, I mean, Ollie, you had the experience of walking into the chemistry building and there were all these at-risk letters pinned up all over the walls. Yeah. And I think I've seen it before in the history department.
There's a similar thing in the physics department. So near our big B1 foyer, there's currently a notice board of like a collection of these. And there's a meeting tomorrow.
Yeah. Sorry, go on, Sam.
No, that's absolutely fine. That is exactly it. You know, it is there. And again, there was no pressure and there was no obligation to pin your letter to the mast, so to speak. I felt moved to in solidarity with my academic colleagues. And so, yeah, within chemistry, I can state that of the 46 academic staff we have, 31 of them received at-risk letters.
Good Lord.
Which is such a huge amount. And as you'll see from the flyers and posters dotted around from the University and College Union, the plan is to cut a significant percentage of staff. Looking at the numbers in chemistry, for us, it'll be about 30%.
Wow.
How they expect us to then be able to carry out research and teaching at the level we're currently at defies all logic and reason. And that's the thing. You don't have to be a STEM specialist to employ logic and reason to then work out that it is impossible to deliver teaching and research at its current level when you have fewer staff. So it makes sense is basically what I'm trying to drive at. I would at this point thoroughly recommend that should you wish to find out more information, which may be difficult to find on the university website, by all means go onto the UCU website. If you just literally do a search of UCU Nottingham branch, you go on there and there are really clear sections on what Future Nottingham is, what is happening, you know, what the actual proposals are, and therefore what the counter proposal is that they're putting together right now to fight this. As I said, there's only so much I'm permitted to say and do, but and I should declare I am not actually a member of UCU. I'm championing them to the limit. I'm a member of a different union called Unite. Okay. So Unite actually looks after the technical staff. So as again, apologies, I don't mean to correct our dysfunction, but there are three there are three unions that represent university staff should they wish to join them. You've got UCU, of course. You've got Unison, who generally are open to our amazing administrative professional management staff, and then you've got Unite, which are the for the technical staff. And so I think it's important that, yeah, if you're not a member of the union, it doesn't matter, just reach out to your local union, speak to union members, speak to your colleagues in your respective departments, and just find out what's going on and what it is that the union are doing, and perhaps it's something that you can then join or support to help each other get through this, and also figure out what we should do next.
So Ali, I'm just gonna, Jamie, do you have any questions for Sam?
Yeah, so in the School of Physics, what they are attempting to implement is, and I think this is the same staff student ratio across most departments, is 18 to 22. Now, one number that I know from the UCU's initial counter proposal from December is that this is 4 members of staff less than Manchester, which is the highest, 14.2 to 1. That would completely destroy the School of Physics. I'm just wondering, Sam, is like, how unrealistic is that for chemistry? Like, for physics, that would completely decimate entire research fields that we've been renowned for decades.
I would say it's akin to that, personally, because just like physics, because it's such a practical subject, you think of your labs, you think of the things that could potentially go wrong if you don't have the right supervision. And with the utmost respect to our glorious undergraduates, sometimes, you know, things happen, you take your eye off the ball, and it can go from something that could be quite trivial and the equivalent of a paper cut to something that
I've seen that myself. I have the marks myself, you know, from things. It's a split second can change everything. And when you've got in terms of like demonstrators and academics in the labs in chemistry, I think it's something like I think maybe have like 7 to 8 or so in total for a cohort of maybe a 50-60 students. Even then, issues still happen, and they want to reduce that. And to be honest, I've especially in my year, there are some students who require a bit more supervision than others as well, and it's just asking for accidents and injuries that university will be liable for.
You have absolutely hit the nail on the head. We should be evening out and leveling that playing field, and we are at a point where we can accommodate students who require that extra support, and they jolly well should have that extra support in order to enable them to be able to get that equivalent degree and equip them with those equivalent skills. And it's one of those things where, and especially because we're now in a post-COVID society, you know, these are students who will not have been able, physically able, to have had that lab experience when they were younger, because they weren't able to actually go into schools or colleges. And so it's almost like, well, they have to play catch up. And so, yeah, if you've got enough staff there to facilitate, you know, this engagement, fantastic. So that's from, absolutely from health and safety point of view, it's absolutely essential we have enough boots on the ground, we have enough people to supervise, we have enough people to teach. And the moving on from that, it also therefore is goes beyond the lab environment. Personal tutors. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love a personal tutor? It's just having that contact time, knowing that you've got that academic there to go to.
Mm.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be because, oh, it's any... You can just go to them for a chat. You can just go to them to just have a really decent conversation, chat with them about, you know, where you want to take your career or how you think you're doing on this particular module, or just, you know, from a well-being point of view, that they check in with you and make sure that you're doing okay. And if you increase exactly from whatever it is to 18 to 22, you automatically cannot have that quality engagement with your personal tutor because they physically do not have the time to see all of those students.
And I will say, I mean, I'm the odd one out here. I'm a history guy, so I'm humanities in a room full of STEM. But that's a huge one in history. I mean, with dissertations and essays, and I mean, there's a few teachers in the department who, I mean, you can go into their office hours, and if they're not too busy, then they will just have a little history chat with you, and it's so valuable. It's so valuable. I've had some of the best conversations I've ever had with people with my history tutors, and I mean, they're very much facing the same kind of thing.
Exactly.
It's a fascinating thing that you mentioned about the safety as well from the cutting staff, and that's something we would have in physics. I'm sure other
can't quite relate in history.
Yeah, you might get a paper cut from Tony Brooks. Yeah. But it's fascinating that you mentioned that, because it's almost like cutting these academic members of staff. And the technical members of staff isn't just denying them of modules and education and avenues for their careers. It actively could put them at risk sometimes. And like Oliver said, the accidents that happen, the university is liable for. It's fascinating.
Actually, one thing I actually want to mention is I don't know if this is the same for physics, but in chemistry, before we go to a lab, we have to go to a safety briefing every single we have to do.
We have to sign safety books. We have so much. There's staff that administer these safety books that are decades old. It's signatures. Like, I found one of my physics teacher from A level is the reason I came to Nottingham, and he signed that book in 2008. It's the same book I signed. There are people that are like looking after these, and these are important documents as well. Because there's so many things.
Of the physics department.
I have to read so many safeties when we're working with lasers, etc. But if nobody writes it, I can't use it.
Yeah,
yeah.
The thing that I wanted to say is that with chemistry, I can't. You'll know the name of this organization. I can't remember it, but they're essentially the safety people. They have a warrant which is higher than the police, I believe. Stephen stole me.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's not just like, obviously, a moral and ethical and pastoral, you know, responsibility to our students. It's a legal responsibility. You know, if something goes wrong, someone is going to get the chop. Someone, and it goes all the way to the top.
Exactly, yeah.
All the way to the VC.
And they talk about, like, the amount of money these will save. But let's say there's one accident. The reputational and financial damage to a department could do far more damage than cutting 100 academic staff.
Yeah.
And I it's almost a bit myopic.
Exactly.
Very much so. I think with that, what we'll do is we'll have a short music break, then we'll be right back afterwards. Thank you very much.
You are listening to The Pulse, every day, 5 till 6.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back. You've caught us right in the middle of a fantastic interview we are having with Sam Tang, and I think we'll just get straight back to it. Ollie, did you have...
Yes, so we've spoken a lot about how it's kind of affecting the chemistry department's being affected, how it will affect the chemistry department. But what are the actual demands of the strikes? What are the strikes to begin with, and how are they? What are you hoping to get from this?
So I'll Yeah, in terms of Unite, which is for technical colleagues, their members' meetings this Friday, which is great. We'll have more information then. Mm-hmm. UCU have been fantastic and have already disseminated a lot of information across campus. I fully urge anyone to just spend a moment of their time, pick up a flyer, look at a poster, and you can get the full information there of how Future Nottingham 2 is going to impact staff and, of course, students. I guess the key thing with the proposal and all of those cuts is the way in which it's being done. Essentially, it's to try and get ready monies now, and therefore it's very sudden, it's very abrupt, it's very disruptive, it's obviously devastating. The way UCU have created their counter proposal is to say, we recognise that the higher education landscape is in trouble. Mm. We understand that with the tuition fees not going up in line with inflation, we've got ourselves in this situation where every uni has some kind of financial trouble. Although I will point out that there's a lovely article by The Tab which looks at surpluses and deficits across the UK Russell Group. Anywho, in terms of, what UCU's council proposal is about is essentially through natural attrition of staff. So staff who want to retire, staff who want to move on, change career, whatever. When those staff decide they want to go, then rather than rehiring, that's when you'll lose the staff, and that's when you can gradually kind of make those savings. It will take a few years, but those savings can be made. Also, things like not having to buy massive buildings or create new ones, and having to spend a significant sum of money for a big chunk of land like that. Cost savings elsewhere, maybe taking a look at how people, for example, travel on business flights and things like that. I'm just spitballing here. But, things like that could potentially save some money here and there.
Hypothetically, of course.
No correlation, no causation. As scientists. I think it's basically the main demand is, don't make these redundancies compulsory.
Hmm.
Because that's essentially it. If not enough people take voluntary redundancy, then it's going to get to a stage where, we still have all these people kicking around. We've still got all these salaries we need to pay. That won't do. Off you go.
Hmm.
And that's when people aren't given a choice. And that's the danger. And so UCU essentially want the university to guarantee that it will not have to carry out any compulsory redundancies until the end of 2027, which is still a very short period of time.
Yeah.
But it gives us a bit more time to figure things out, to look at finances, to allow people, as I said, to naturally kind of this attrition. And therefore, you're not forcing so many people out in one fell swoop. I guess that is what it was. I mean, that's horrendously simplified. I appreciate that.
Great.
The UCU local branch website is phenomenal for having so much useful information published on there.
Yeah.
Take a look at that. But I would recommend doing that. Yeah.
For me, just to butt in quickly, that's quite terrifying. End of 2027, like you say, is not much time. Well, it feels like a lot of time. It's a year and a half away. But let's say that there's someone who knows that they're going to be on that compulsory redundancy list, and they have a year and a half to find a job, which might be abroad, then get their affairs in order, move to this country, set up a life in this country, maybe study the language just to keep in a job. It's almost like the people at the heart of these redundancies are almost being forgotten, that they're people and not numbers on a spreadsheet. And I think that's a dangerous precedent to set. And if they do go ahead with compulsory redundancies, then reputational damage can be awful.
Yeah. So would you specifically the strikes are right now I believe we are just before the sixth hour of the marking boycott. And there is also a picket line, I believe, which starts on
Friday at 8 a.m.
As far as you're aware, are there any other actions being taken?
Not at present.
No.
as I said, Unite's meeting isn't until Friday afternoon, so I won't hear any more about what Unite are going to do from a technical aspect. And yeah, it's a really hard decision. And I cannot emphasize enough that this is not something that any academic takes lightly. They have had weeks and months where they've attempted to engage with the senior management, to have conversations, discussions, present the counter proposal, everything like that. The fact that they've had to do the marking and assessment boycott is a horrendous and desperate move to get the senior management to listen.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the equivalent of, you know, just picking them up and shaking them and saying, please, can you just look at this? Can you just listen to this? You know, this is what this consultation period is about.
Yeah.
You know, getting them to kind of see an alternative, see a different point of view. There's all, it says it on the UCU flyer, there's always an alternative. Don't press ahead with this. Don't steamroll this ahead. And like I said, to send out all of these letters as part of a consultancy, I don't understand how that is considered consultation. And therefore, it's kind of forcing the hand of the academics to do this. No one's happy about it.
Yeah.
No one wants to see our students upset. It's already so stressful. You know, I've been there. I was an undergrad and a postgrad. I've been through those exams. I remember the anxiety I had. I remember feeling sick and wanting to run to the toilet every 10 minutes before the exam started. It was horrendous. And so, you know, to have this all happening now, during revision and an exam season, it's awful. Like, none of us wanted this, but here we are.
And I just wondered on that note, I mean, obviously, I imagine it might mean slightly different things for different departments, but obviously what this marking boycott entails, the kind of headline thing that could be impacted is, you know, we're saying potentially way down the line, if things go a certain way, students might have a possibly delayed graduation or might not graduate. I mean, are you able to kind of talk about what could happen?
No, I mean, that's the thing. It's, you can infer, again, I'm in a room with, like, you guys are so clever. You know, we are intelligent, you would hope we're at university. We're intelligent people, right? You can therefore say that, oh, if A and B is that, then it's going to be C. It's going to have an effect on, you know, when the marking gets done, and therefore when people progress and when people are going to graduate.
Yeah.
You know, in all honesty, I can't say. I'm not senior management. I don't get to decide this sort of thing.
Sure.
Students will graduate. Students will graduate.
Okay.
There may be, obviously, a delay, but students, life has to continue, and students will progress and students will graduate. It's just at the moment, it's difficult. We're in a really difficult position. Yeah. It's hard, and you kind of feel like an animal fenced into a corner. What can you do? The only thing you can do is either run away, and if you can't run away, then you fight.
Yeah.
Coming here, coming to Nottingham, I came here because it's an excellent university. It has an excellent chemistry department, and has been at the forefront of chemical learning and research for better part of a century. Its reputation has preceded it for decades. At one point, I believe, we were the first and only, or one, or maybe second, university to have ever split Oxford and Cambridge.
Yeah, for real.
On the league tables. Yeah. In chemistry as university.
Yeah.
These proposed changes, these proposed cuts and redundancies will have an effect, a detrimental effect on the reputation of Nottingham, University of Nottingham. How serious do you think it will be?
Yeah, I remember it well. I was in that room when so there's a thing called the Research Excellence Framework, which is, as it says there, it's like a league table for university research.
Mm-hmm.
And so every university takes this extremely seriously, because the higher up in the rankings you are, the more money you get from the government. Simple as that. So do better, be better, get more moolah. The REF in 2008, when it was published, it was glorious for us in chemistry because it was, yeah, we came second. We were in slap bang in between Oxford and Cambridge. And the champagne was flowing and we were all gathered at the top floor of chemistry. And we just were like, we were so proud that, you know, we'd pulled together and we could show that we had done so well here. And that was 2008. So less than 20 years later, look where we are. We're in this situation. And it is a ludicrous situation. And I know it's ludicrous because, and Oliver, hopefully you'll reiterate this later. One of my colleagues has created an open letter, basically to raise awareness of what's happening with the School of Chemistry and to ask people to sign it to essentially oppose the threat of compulsory redundancies to Nottingham and, you know, everything that entails in terms of the impact on research and teaching. So, if you don't mind, I've got a few quotes from that open letter.
Yeah,
and in
please.
Fact, this morning I saw one of my undergrads who's, I've got permission to use his quote because I was having a chat with him this morning before he did his exam. His exam was at 2 o'clock, Advanced Physical 2, Electric Boogaloo. he said, "I chose Nottingham because of the staff here. I could have gone to any other uni. Birmingham had newer, better labs, but it was talking to the people that made me choose to come here. I can't even remember who it was I spoke to on open day, but they sounded like they cared about me."
Mm.
And it's like, it's those interactions with the staff that have influenced or, you know, allowed us to recruit some, you know, amazing talent. In terms of, you know, current students now, again, the quote from the open letter, "A current second year is written, as a student in chemistry at the University of Nottingham, I'm incredibly concerned about the quality of teaching that will be able to be delivered as a result of these proposed changes. Mm. I don't think it benefits the university as a whole, the chemistry department or its students." So it's, you know, already the students who are aware of what's going on are showing their concern, are signing this letter. And even before coming to uni, obviously we're always in a round of recruitment. I've had an email this week from a student who attended at year 12. He came to a summer school last July.
Yeah.
And said he didn't know who to reach out to, but remember my name from the summer school and wrote, "I currently have accepted an offer to study an integrated master's in chemistry at Nottingham. However, in recent news, I'm worried about the quality of my study and wanted an honest opinion. From your perspective, will the University of Nottingham, chemistry department be the same quality I experienced during the summer school throughout my study period?" It's like, I don't know how to answer that. And he's absolutely valid in sending me that email and asking those questions.
Yeah.
But he has noticed what's gone on in the national news and is thinking, do I really want to come to Nottingham in that respect? Then that's awful.
Yeah.
So I'll just finish with a quote from one of my former project students. And they said that these plans are unbelievably short-sighted. For a university with such a rich history in chemistry and a school with strong current research and teaching outputs, it's unthinkable that cuts are being put forward. Instead of threatening staff with redundancies, they should be thanking them for the prestige the School of Chemistry brings to the uni. And, you know, that's someone who graduated in 2022. They're now doing a PhD. And that's it. People who are at the uni, who've been at the uni, who know people who work at the uni, who used to work here themselves, so much love and fondness and support has come through this open letter that we've put online. And it's phenomenal, the traction it's got. So I put it on my own LinkedIn. In the last 4 days, it's had 40,000 impressions, over 100 reposts, 20-something comments. The letter itself has had over 1,000 signatories already, and including in that are at least 3, if not 4, Nobel laureates.
There
are 5 Nobel laureates. Yep. Yes, get in. 5 Nobel laureates. We've got countless fellows of the Royal Society. We have Yuri Oganessian sign it. Yuri is the only living scientist, who has had an element named after him.
That's incredible.
Yeah, he came in 2019 and he signed the periodic tables in our lecture theatre. So his name is literally signed next to element 118. The guy is so lovely. And the fact that, yeah, all of these amazing and brilliant scientists have taken the time out and gone, you know what, this ain't right. We need to sign this thing and we need to get our point across and our support across. And in amongst, you know, those notaries, you have countless signatures from former graduates, undergraduates, postgraduates, collaborators, investors, you know, industrialists, people who've said, this was the start of my career. As a result of this, I am now senior this, director that, working in this industry, working in finance, whatever. It's incredible. And this will be the same, not just for chemistry, but for history, for physics, for so many other subjects where their grounding, their start was right here in Nottingham, and they've gone on to do phenomenal things. So, yeah, it's just seeing that evidence there, and you just then have to ask the question, is that going to make a difference?
Yeah.
Is that going to make a difference?
The worst thing for me about it is I hate to make it political, but there's a rising tide across a lot of Western countries, especially driven by the US, about, like, let's deny science, let's not bother with science, who cares about science? Is it really that important? And the decisions to put two massive departments, because the School of Physics also has a renowned reputation, to put most of the academic staff between the two schools on redundancy note.
You guys almost feed Einstein.
Yep, we have a blackboard with Einstein's writing on it.
That's ridiculous.
We refuse to rub it out. Yep. MRI was invented at Nottingham, Peter Mansfield. Mm-hmm. Got a building named after him.
Silicon was coined here.
Yep.
To put the academic staff of both schools, basically all of them, on the redundancy notice, almost feels like they're feeding into this whole global narrative now of, let's just ignore science, who actually cares, what good does it bring, when really
chemistry, we're tired of experts.
The advancements in physics and chemistry and all the other sciences and engineering are the reason that everyday technologies, everyday activities are so able, and people take that for granted, and decisions like this will just feed other universities perhaps to make similar cuts and decisions that will just almost make all of science, for me, a bit sterilized, and just let's churn out graduates rather than let's invent things, let's create things. That's what science is, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You've hit the nail on the head. And again, referring to that letter, because a lot of people have commented on a number of different aspects of what this, you know, the negative impacts of this would be. Fundamentally, it's that research, and it's that thinking, and it's that creativity that we've got here from so many different people, so many different minds. And it's just we act as a springboard, we act as that kind of starting point. Just to come back to the here and now, it's one of those things where I imagine it's the same with physics. You know, when the news came out, I felt like we were in a zombie apocalypse.
Right.
The building just went boosh, and you're walking around, and everyone's staring at the floor. I know for a fact I could hear colleagues crying in their offices. I just didn't know really how to react. People didn't know what to say, what to do. And you're going around, and it just, this air of depression, this air of utter sadness, anxiety, fear, anger, you know, people who, exactly as you said, Jamie, is just like, what are we going to do for our lives? Because this is what it's about. We want to be in academia. And with, as you say, with the UK landscape as it is, it's not like, oh, I can just go and get a job at another university. You just can't. There are no jobs.
We were talking about how a professor in physics, in a break, the only job that is available for him is in China. And like I mentioned earlier, the UCU pushing it hopefully back to late 2027 still gives people only a year and a half to find a job in a different country, different culture, different everything. Yeah. Changes their lives completely through no fault of their own.
Well, brain drain, isn't it? I mean, that's a surefire way for us to lose one of the UK's greatest assets that it still has left. I think we're coming slightly towards the end of our time, but Sam, I just wondered if you had maybe a final message you'd like to say to either colleagues or students or anyone else about all this.
Yes, I would say that the university loves using that tagline, we are UON.
Yeah.
And it sounds as corporate, as cliche as it does. But what I would do is put, you know, URN spin on it, which is just support each other, show that we care about each other, show that there is an alternative. I really appreciate that right now students have very little bandwidth. You know, the exams absolutely have to come first, and we want you to do the absolute best. Just smash those exams, keep on revising, and do your very best.
Yeah.
But when you get a chance to, when you feel like you can make your voice heard, do so. Literally just search it out online, you know, the university have buried somewhere in the student news how they can speak out about future Nottingham too, do so. Because that's the thing. It's like one of the things that does get university higher ups noticing things is if students aren't happy, because then it feeds into student surveys and then it means less money. So, you know, if we have to be kind of mercenary about this, we have to be mercenary about it. But just, yeah, show your support. As I said, you know, right now, your academics and your technicians and indeed your APM staff who went through phase one, because goodness knows that was awful, they could do with some love right now. It's breaking everyone's hearts that they have to do this boycott and these strikes just to be noticed. And I swear, you know, we're not doing it to annoy our students or make them unhappy. We're trying to save a future for this university. So if the students can just show us the support, show that, you know, what we're doing has their support too, and feedback on these proposals and tell them it's not on, that would be amazing. You know, we have a counter proposal here that has been produced by a University of Nottingham economist. This isn't something that's just been scribbled on the back of a napkin. This isn't something that, oh, the union has created this, so it's just going to be them throwing their toys out the pram. There is considerable thought and development.
Expertise.
And yes, absolutely. You know, who else but an economist could come up with a decent counterproposal? Come on. And, you know, this is from someone who's been here long enough. I remember when we had an economist as a vice chancellor, and by golly, by jingo, he was amazing. and so that's it. There is this counter proposal. So if students look it up, read it, see the sense of it, go back to the senior management and say, you know what, listen to this, because this is going to save jobs and save our degrees. And make sure that the degrees we graduate with are worth, you know, what we intend them to be worth. Then I think that's the best thing you can do.
Sam Tang, thank you so much. Is there any particular websites or anything of that variety that you might want to point in the direction of?
Yeah, so as I said, if you do a search of UCU Nottingham branch, a wealth of information on there. If you do a search of open letter, chemistry Nottingham, you're going to find that open letter, and if you feel moved to sign it, I believe there is also the open letter for physics. I'm sure there is.
Yes, there is. Yep, 2000 signatures
well.
At the moment.
Wow. Okay.
Look for your department.
Yuri still wins. It's not a competition. Not a competition. No, definitely not. That's the thing. So many departments are under threat, not just chemistry and physics. If your own department has something like this, seek it out, get your name on there. Reach out to your personal tutor, reach out to your friendly neighbourhood technician. Make that choice of engaging and just, like I said, getting your voice heard and standing with us. That's all we can ask you to do, really. Yeah. And,
Well, Sam Tang, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you in the studio. Thank you so much for giving us your time.
Pleasure.
I think URN is always happy to help on these proceedings. We'll admit news bias in this in this sense towards
as long as
your
you
efforts.
Declare an interest, Rob.
Yes, yes, indeed. I think we'll go to a song break now, and thank you, and stay tuned, because we'll still have. Sam will be leaving us, but we'll still have more to come in terms of strike coverage. So thank you all very much.
You are listening to The Pulse on URN.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to The Pulse. My name is Rob O'Connor. We are actually joined by someone brand new to The Pulse. Welcome to Lottie. Hello. Just make sure you're a bit closer to the mic there, Lottie. Yeah.
Mic 4 is notorious for being...
Mic 4 is terrible. How are you doing, Lottie?
I'm good. I'm all right. Very much done with coursework, so I'm chilling.
Very good.
Probably unlike most other people.
Yeah, I'm still there.
At least you haven't got 4 more exams, Robert.
Yes, I'm appreciative of that. I do not envy the STEMI people in my house. I think the interview we just had was fantastic with Sam. I thought she was really articulate, and I thought it was a great interview. But in this second part, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the strikes in general. We're going to talk for the first third about the kind of lead up. We're going to talk about what the strikes earlier in the year looked like when we covered those. We're going to be talking about some of the comments we've received from various faculty members and that kind of thing. We're being rejoined by Ollie. He's gone to Spa. You got a Fanta there, is that what you got?
Iron Brew.
Oh, he's a Scotsman. I was just saying about the structure of the show. We're going to talk initially about the sort of origins of all these strikes, and then we're going to go into the sort of ramifications, and then we're going to talk about the sort of future of Nottingham. But with that, we'll also sort of intersperse it with some comments from faculty and that kind of thing. Anyway, so let's cast our minds back to, was it November?
It was, Robert.
It was, yeah.
I have the dates in my notes.
What's the first date that you can go back to?
So if you will allow me a second to open my Google Docs. Future Nottingham 1, UON announces course closures on the 6th of November 2025.
Wow, what an innocent time.
The 5th of November was a lovely evening, and then the next day everything came crashing down.
Everything came crashing down. Yes, and it was certainly an abrupt wake-up call. I seem to remember that there were also sort of people sticking their notices up on their boards and that kind of thing at that time as well. I'm sure I saw that in the history building. I mean, Lottie, I don't know how much you do politics.
Within liberal arts,
yeah. Have you seen kind of faculty members pinning up their notices and that kind of thing on the boards? Or
not as much. I've noticed liberal arts has been being offered far fewer politics modules.
Okay.
But I haven't, because I did my politics module this last semester. It was all sort of after I'd finished that it all started to kick off.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We were essentially all comparing how we're going to be sort of affected by the strikes. Jamie, you have some notes ready, it seems.
Yes, I do.
What do they say?
With regards to what are you asking me, Robert?
I'm talking about the sort of first phase in terms of the origins of these strikes.
So, when the University of Nottingham announced that they were suspending recruitment for 42 courses, including all modern foreign languages and music courses, on the 6th of November 2025, it also signalled its intention to sell Castle Meadow campus, which the Nottingham Post labelled as an £80 million vanity project.
Right.
The 2024-25 accounts showed that Castle Meadow campus, which the university bought for £37.5 million in 2021 and spent over £40 million refurbishing, is now valued at approximately £15 million. That's quite a drop-off. This follows UON's announcement on intention to sell the King's Meadow campus in January 2025. The original UCU industrial action and URN coverage, student rebuttal, etc., was not enough to prevent University Council voting in favour in November, at the very end of November, which began phase two, and the timeline was set out for May 2026, which is where we are today.
Yeah.
The time between the university announcing cuts to the UC meeting was only 19 days, but despite this short time frame, a remarkable fight-back effort was organised, including the original picket line that we at URN did cover. I was there. It was great fun. Certain groups, though, I would argue, have not really listened and are failing to represent the student population. And with Future Nottingham 2 now here, we've had the student body preparing for quite a while for a more organised pushback. And hopefully, maybe this time, people will listen.
because that was sort of where they got them in how short the turnaround was. I mean, that's less than 3 weeks.
Yes, it is. And including, if you don't include weekends as well, that's not very much time for people to organise. And this was also towards the end of the first semester, where people are already thinking about their exams and their second semester modules. So it's a difficult time.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that the second lot of cuts have also been announced around this sort of a time.
As Sam mentioned, exams come first, but of course there's a lot of people affected by this, but they almost kind of are a bit muted because they have more important things going on in their own personal lives right now.
Yeah. What I would like to do with this second half of the broadcast is kind of intersperse with a few of the sort of comments from faculty and that kind of thing. And I've got one right here. I won't name this lecturer, but he's a great guy, and I'm just going to read the email he sent me. These proposed cuts are absolutely brutal and will completely gut the arts and humanities provision at the university. I believe that the reduction across arts is something like 44%. The UEB and VC are very keen to stress to students that their experience will not be compromised by this restructuring. But if you think about what cutting this many academic jobs will do to the staff-to-student ratio, as we were talking about earlier, you can imagine what this means in terms of quality of tuition, feedback, and assessment. And it's talking about an incredible sort of marking workload, especially in the history faculty. If you think about the amount of sort of essays that are chonked onto them that they've got to get through, especially if we're talking sort of first years and the breadth of those courses. And that is before we even begin to address the very real human impact of the acute stress and anxiety generated for colleagues who are on permanent contracts but are now suddenly faced with the very real possibility of redundancy. And she says he will be taking part in the action. So, I mean, this is... Sam was talking about the kind of stress that had been injected into these departments. And I think it's pretty... I mean, if we're talking about how these started in November, this has probably been ongoing. These people have probably been fearing for their jobs for months now. And I mean, I don't know about you, but that's not particularly a working environment that I would love to be.
I remember mentioning when we originally covered the industrial action in November, and I was speaking to some modern foreign languages in this very studio. I said that I don't think that anyone should rule anything out in future Nottingham 2. Very fortunately, people at the top that are far beyond any of us also agreed. And so I do think that there are a lot of provisions in place for people that have been acutely affected. But that's not from the people that should be supporting them. That's through people supporting them whilst they already have other things to do. And the amount of, sort of solidarity between people that already have unbelievable amounts of workload academically and outside of that to come together to support each other despite a remarkable amount of upheaval and uncertainty is fascinating and a lesson to those who maybe aren't paying attention.
Yeah, right. Ollie, do you have anything to comment on the kind of progression of the strikes and, I mean, how they've sort of accumulated, I suppose?
Well, as Sam was mentioning earlier, a marking boycott is the last thing an academic wants to do.
Yeah,
a professor wants to do. It just goes to show that they've not been listened to. There's been zero consistent zero consultation with anyone affected by the redundancies, by the cuts, and the measures that are being taken by the unions are an absolute last resort, but something that it does feel like they've been forced into. They've not been heard. They've not been listened to.
Yeah,
this is the only way that this leadership will listen. The only way that this leadership will listen to anyone is if it affects their bottom line, and that the only way that's going to happen is through students complaining.
Yeah. What do you reckon, Lottie? You've said to me that you've been quite involved with unions in the past and that kind of thing. How have you seen effectiveness in action in your experience?
Well, I mean, I would say
to anybody, like, my one of the best conversations I had early on was, I just, one of the union reps was at one of the picket lines, and I just pulled him aside and was like, tell me what's going on, like, have a chat. And that I would recommend anybody, if you ever see, if you ever are presented that situation, have a chat, because they're so happy to, and it just shows your support. The other thing I was going to mention is, when we're sort of talking about the, like, no one is safe thing, and how, like, it, the trickle down effect of it is something that Madison spoke about really well on Culture Shock last week, was that it's people, it's like disability support and those, like, intrinsic support networks that go first, where they're so important for the people that use them and so important for people that need them. But at a higher up or university or bottom line level, as you were just saying, it, they're the things that fail. And when people are really stressed and have so much on their mind, it's those things that start to drop off the back end. So it's, people are going to be really seriously affected, even if it's not by directly by the fact that their course is being closed.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk to your local union rep. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to put it off to a song break, but also I'm going to actually bring in a little comment, a little recorded comment that we have received from one of the union reps, Ella, and we're going to let that play, and then we're gonna bring it back to conversation about kind of the what the ramifications of these strikes could be and that kind of thing. But for now, we'll just have a wee music break.
This is URN.
Hi, it's Ella from Health Sciences, in my role as a Reps Coordinator and Membership Secretary for UON's branch of the UCU Trade Union. Here are some key updates about the marking and assessment boycott organised by our branch. All departments where there is teaching and assessment will be impacted in some way. We don't know what the participation rates will be in any areas, because no one's legally required to identify their participation in any industrial action before or during it, only afterwards. And so we don't ask our members about this. However, given that each department is facing massive cuts to staffing, like it's 43% in health sciences where I work and up to 100% in other departments, I would expect to see comparable levels of disruption, even in schools facing smaller cuts locally. There's also been some careful coordination in departments to strategically maximise the impact of individual people on a local level. We also need to wait and see the outcome from Senate tomorrow around contingency regulations. Back in 2023, when this happened before, it meant deriving marks from the grades awarded on other assessments within a module or across the year, regardless of your performance on the affected assessment, leaving all of that time dedicated to working on that assessment being unrecognised and devalued by university leadership. There's also some regulatory bodies that don't allow this approach, and we've already been contacted by external examiners to say that they won't be signing off on a module where this is used due to the devaluation of work, your work in this way. So there could be further localised impacts as well as a result of contingency regulations, depending on tomorrow's outcome. The impact on students will also vary quite significantly, even within a module. So you could have a class with someone who has their work read and marked in full on time by your expected marker, but yours is not marked by a person appropriately specialised in that area because they're covering for a colleague's incomplete marking, undermining the action. But you might also have marks that are simply not returned when you're expecting them, and that can have knock-on effects on your progression, your degree completion, and maybe even graduation timelines. Depending on where you are in your course, it is likely to impact progression and completion and what comes next for you. The primary point of our dispute between UCU, University Colleges Union, and the university is to have no staff facing compulsory redundancy before the end of 2027. At present, if voluntary redundancy targets are not met over the summer, with the first staff members leaving in November this year, the compulsory redundancy is set to start in February 2027. So we're looking to extend that till at least the end of December 2027. The Vice-Chancellor and University Executive Board have had many opportunities to make smart decisions about the university's financial and organisational strategy. UCU have also provided multiple alternative financial strategies and modelling of the impacts that increased staff student ratios will have on our league table rankings, and all sorts of other modelling and strategic support over the last few years to support UON leadership in making wise and well-informed decisions. But the university leadership, the vice-chancellor, have not adequately engaged with the support, and ultimately members of staff across the university are picking up the pieces by losing their jobs. And in many cases, these redundancies will be the end of people's careers. And thinking about the marking assessment boycott, the trouble is that after losing over 350 members of staff last year through the first phase of this Future Nottingham programme, the administrative teams behind assessments and processing grades are struggling to keep up with business as usual. So even a small level of disruption from the assessment boycott by academic staff and other administrative and professional services staff, it will have a huge impact. With the Vice-Chancellor and University Executive Board looking at making over 600 people redundant, this experience will be a bit of a taste of what to expect from 2027 onwards in the new normal, with such a reduction in staff numbers, if they continue with that plan. So as much as we are defending our jobs, we are also doing this action in defence of future students' learning conditions. The other point to raise about this dispute is that all of the staff participating in the marking and assessment boycott are due to be deducted their full pay for that time, despite expectations from their employer to continue with the other 90% of our work. So there's a lot going on with this marking assessment boycott. There's a lot to think about. You're always welcome to contact us at the UCU team, so UONUCU on just Google it or on Instagram. You're always very welcome to ask us questions about what's going on. The URN team have also asked me about my own personal perspective, and for me, I'm just really concerned about what UON will look like for staff and students in the future. I've been here nearly 11 years across 3 degrees and 6.5 years of teaching, and I think that the UON as we know it is going to be forever changed. The proposals this Future Nottingham Phase 2 put together will narrow the opportunities for students, and already the reputational damage this has caused to our courses will unfortunately impact our recent graduates and our future students. And we're all facing such severe increases to staff and student ratios. So in my school, it's increasing by over 50%. My colleagues and I simply won't have capacity to meet students' academic and pastoral support needs, which, I mean, it's just so sad to see what the proposed plans are doing to our university and its community. I'm set to lose my job before the end of the year, and unless I can write a proposal to save it. But if the proposed changes come into effect, I'm not so sure I even want to stick around for that, regardless, as a result of all that's going on. So thank you all so much for your time and for listening to us and hearing out what we've got to say from UCU.
This is The Pulse. Well, those were some absolutely incredible words from Ella, and I would like to extend my sincerest thanks to her. I think we're all very thankful. It was incredibly well spoken. It was a fantastic summary of what is a grim situation. And I wanted to use this section to talk about the impact on students themselves. So to selfishly use myself as an example, so marking boycotts have happened today. I have one more essay which is due in after today, and I wasn't able to get it in beforehand. I suppose the other ones I've handed in, hopefully they've been marked and hopefully they'll come out at some point, but who knows. But this one essay, you know, if it doesn't get marked, then it could possibly sort of hold my degree up, and if it holds my degree up, I've got an offer from LSE to do a master's, and so I'm really hoping that the grade comes out before then and that I will be able to do my master's. Otherwise, I think the university will have been made to look like a bunch of silly billies for not consulting these people who are striking. And you know, I even though sort of my degree is slightly hanging in the balance. I have full sympathy for the strikers. So that's how I'm affected by all this. Is anyone else here sort of very directly affected?
I will speak on behalf of my friend Amy, who I think is listening, and if you are, I love you very much. So she has a she's got a job lined up with Teach First, so she will be teaching from September 2026. She's very excited. She's always wanted to be a teacher. Now the marking boycott has put that on the line. If she doesn't get her degree accredited by July, then she may have to defer the beginning of this to 2027-28, which is a loss of money, change of plans for her and her partner, a lot of upheaval in her life, and for people progressing. This isn't just about people graduating as well, people progressing. So I had a situation last year where I had to do an exam in the summer due to personal circumstances, whatever, first sit, and that did impact my ability to progress on time. So my student finance payments were delayed by 2 weeks at the very start of 2025-26. Now, if people's progression are delayed, then that means Student Finance England can't validate that they have progressed in time. And if they can't validate that they've progressed in time, they're not going to release several thousand pounds to students who rely on this money, especially people on lower and middle incomes who rely on student finance to pay for bills, pay for rent, pay for food. Again, none of this is the UCU's fault or the marking boycotters' fault. I completely sympathise and understand them. But this directly impacts students' lives outside of graduating and progressing, and the academic impact. This affects everything to do with that, because progression and graduation is basically your life goal, because that is what will change your personal circumstances. So for me personally, I'm worried about, maybe my rent is due towards the end of September 2027 for the first month of my time at my new house next year. That might be, I might have to say to my landlord, look, you might have to wait, and I'm sorry. Blame certain people.
Yeah. We do actually have a question coming in. Do you think there's anything students can do? The answer is yes. And that was something that Sam spoke about very well. Petitions. There are petitions on the UCU websites for each department. I'm pretty sure that the chemistry one and the physics ones have been absolutely blowing up. I'm sure there's one for history, and I will most certainly be looking into it. But sign those petitions, spread those petitions. Call your mum, call your granny, call your dad, call your auntie, call your goldfish. Get them to sign. The more numbers we have, the more of a chance we have at not losing out on some potentially sort of impactful degree things, and for many people also not losing their jobs. So there is certainly things we can do. I mean, if you're local to Nottingham, you can call your MP, maybe. Who knows? But it's there are things we can do.
It's important to say as well, actually, if you aren't local to Nottingham, you can register to be on the electoral register at your location at the university whilst not changing where you are back home. So you can still contact your Nottingham MP.
Yeah. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd actually like to hand it over to Ollie, because I'm aware that you did a cracking interview earlier today. Would you like to tell us a bit about that?
Yes. So today I did an interview with Antonio Padilla with the physics department. He is an excellent communicator and also works on one of the sister channels to Sam. He works on Numberphile and 60 Symbols, if you may have heard of those or seen those on your YouTube recommendations.
Uh-huh.
He's also the UCU branch treasurer for Nottingham, for the Uni of Nottingham, and he spent a long time trying to talk to the university and try and understand where they're coming from, what are their numbers saying. Unfortunately, the numbers are not great. They have said that they have had an £85 million deficit. Even though they bought the campus, Castle Meadow campus, in cash. Right. This was money that we already had. Yeah. This was we had a massive surplus, and they decided that they wanted to buy it, and they have. What they've now done is they have written off £65 million, because the buildings have all been Grade 2 listed, so the value's just gone from that property.
Would you be able to talk about why it being Grade 2 listed is so detrimental?
So a Grade 2 listed building means that it is protected. Mm-hmm. It is a building of historical or architectural significance.
Yeah.
And no changes can be made to it. At grade two listing is one below the highest, which is Grade 1 listed building. But essentially, if you were to do any repairs to it, it has to look the same. You can't change the function of the building. You can't change how it looks, interior or exterior. You cannot make any changes to it, which basically, for a university, makes it useless. Mm-hmm. It is essentially a museum at this point. Instead of office blocks or lecture theatres or whatever it is they wanted to use it for, they're now completely unable to do that, and now no one else wants to touch it because no one else can do anything with it either. Mm-hmm. That single Grade 2 listing, which happened about 2 years after the campus was purchased.
Oh, it happened afterwards?
It happened after it was purchased.
Right.
Knocked off about £65 million worth of value. It went from being bought for around £79 million in total cost spent about £79 million. Then it's now valued at about £14 million, which is nothing, really. But that isn't going to, that doesn't actually affect the books. That's not a debt that we have. We had the money and we've essentially burnt it, but it's not something we necessarily need to build back right this second. What it appears that the leadership team want to do, this is according to Tony Padilla, it appears that the uni is not happy with the amount of profit we've made. I believe last year it was about £0.8 million, which is really not a lot at all for an institution of our size. But what the proposed changes would do is that they would create a profit of about £88 million per year. That would be enough to purchase and burn the entirety of the King's Meadow campus each year. Sorry, Castle Meadow campus, rather, each year.
Right.
That's what the plan is trying to do. That's what all these cuts are an attempt to do. It's just ridiculous. That's not how you do any level of finance. It's just pure short term. Get the money that we lost back, and then we'll make more. I believe Tony was quoted as saying that it's just there to. I've actually lost the quote. I'm not.
Okay.
Sorry, it's going to just completely destabilize the university.
Yeah.
I believe it's a 9%, they want to see a 9% surplus year over year, is just completely unattainable. I don't think there's a single university in the world which can do something like that, other than maybe Oxbridge, and even then, they're probably barely touching it.
Yeah.
It's completely short-sighted, and it's just damaging. It's completely and utterly damaging. There's no other way to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, fantastic. And Lottie.
I was going to say, it also just perfectly illustrates the issue of academics and education being a for-profit and profitable. Yeah. If you don't already, I'd very much recommend following Louisa Munch on Instagram or TikTok, mm-hmm. who talks so well about this, like, all the time. She's great. But it just perfectly shows that when education becomes a profitable endeavour, the actual sanctity of learning and building knowledge for knowledge's sake just dies.
Suffers, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was actually going to pass over to you, Lottie, because I know that you've worked a lot with your local government in Cornwall and that kind of thing. You do a lot for them around there. And so I'm just wondering how much you deal with, or at least how much you encounter things like, you know, budget restraints and sort of this very large part of local politics, local government, and because I think that uni, especially in Nottingham, is very linked to local government and the functioning of the city. What's your experience? I mean, could that bring you a bit of an angle onto this?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's difficult because my constituency doesn't have a university in it. But if right. we're looking at a school level, that it is very interesting. My situation with school was very interesting because the nature of Cornwall is that you kind of, there's a school that you go to, and if you can't, and if you don't like it, you're kind of stuffed because it's the only school that you have access to.
Right.
And the thing that really disappointed me with coming to, with all this whole situation, is it really feels like, you know, they talk a lot about the fact that they want to build a big new STEM building and how that was a big thing for a while. And it felt again like, you know, the arts and humanities, you know, music and theology are suffering so that STEM can prosper. And I know that if you're listening and you're doing STEM, STEM has definitely suffered in this. But that was something that I experienced at school as well, where I went to an academy and they just absolutely funneled money into STEM to a point where it felt like I was absolutely getting nothing. Yeah. And I would go and ask for things, or we'd want to go on a trip and they'd say, sorry, we haven't got any money for that. And it was like, right, but STEM have gotten all of this, like all of these amazing new like things that they get to use. So I think it really felt like a repeat of that, that I think we're seeing all over the country, really. And I think that local governments are really pushed on what they can do about that, because you can sort of say, we really want to, we want humanities and arts to be valued more, and we want to put money here. But at the end of the day, if the school is, say, when, as I said before, when schools are profitable organisations, which they really shouldn't be, it all kind of fails for everybody.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting because being in the history department, it's funny, something like a school trip had never really crossed my mind until someone brought it up. I think it was one of the lecturers in the sort of halfway through second year, where they said, oh yeah, well, we used to do trips. You know, we used to, I think pre-Ukraine, they said, oh well, we used to do a trip to Russia. And I thought, the history department doing trips? You know, really? They used to do that? it's ridiculous. And so, I mean, the money has clearly been absent for a while now. But, I mean, I don't know if they do any physics or chemistry trips.
Oh, goodness, no.
No, all of our stuff gets put into labs.
Robots.
And,
we just break things.
Yeah. No, we have these little funnels. It's like a little rubber bung, rather, that's used as like a seal. It's over 100 pounds. It's maybe like that big.
Yeah.
It's about a square centimetre, square inch, rather.
Uh-huh.
And it's over 100 quid. STEM is like, it's got like a wedding pricing.
I'm so glad that my tuition fees are paying for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. You're very welcome.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like it's not like, let's say, the music department, or for example, was actually making the money, making the university money that was going to my department we were ruining.
That's an interesting thing that you bring up, though, Rob. Is, do you think then that tuition fees should be different based on what subject you do?
I mean, I was mostly saying that as a joke.
I know, but it is an interesting thing to talk about.
I agree. I mean, it's a good question, isn't it? Because, I mean, you... it's a tricky one, because obviously you don't...
Give a political answer.
I could... Yeah, I'm really beating around the bush, because the question... The thing is, I haven't really thought about this long enough.
Yeah.
I'm complaining a hell of a lot, but I'm not giving an answer. I mean, all I can really think of is something like graduate tax or something like that instead of tuition fees. And, I mean, I'm thinking sort of wider in terms of solutions rather than kind of on a funding level. But I mean, it's definitely, and we're going to get into this in the last part of the show, part of a wider issue of university funding, and the struggle for that across universities, and how this government has pretty much just kind of put its hand back and said, you can all fend for yourself. I mean, it's a rather interesting approach to one of the sort of most valuable exports this country has.
The only valuable export at this rate.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. That and finance bros.
We don't even have good footballers anymore, really.
Even the finance bros are in trouble now.
Even the finance bros. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. Even the finance bros are in trouble. Make sure to shed a tear for them.
Get out a t-shirt.
And to get some donations heading their way. we are going to have one last part after the music break, where we will talk about the future of all this and whether we'll all be employed. Yay!
You are listening to the Pulse on URN.
Well, that was agonising to listen to. We had regional divides while the song was going on between Plymouth and Cornwall and Manchester.
Winchester.
I don't quite know why Manchester got involved in the Plymouth
Devon. King of the North!
I'm from the South, so we have no regional pride.
You guys are just proud to begin with.
We're just sort of there.
Superiority.
The more sort of societal affinity people have for Margaret Thatcher by average, the less regional pride. I honestly think those two are sort of connected. I mean,
that's what you
could go to Winchester and ask someone about Margaret Thatcher and they'll probably be like, oh well, you know, she did some good things, rather than anywhere else in the country they'll be like, oh well, and then they'll start swearing.
But anyway, we
got slightly off topic. For our last 10 minutes of this spectacular strike special, which has been really good, I think we've smashed it. It was great to have Sam on earlier. We're going to talk a bit about what the sort of wider ramifications of all of this could be. Is it that this is sort of unique to Nottingham in that it was based on bad investments in all these sort of flamboyant buildings? It's... can't help thinking it's a bit sort of communist dictator in his last decade deciding to build a load of statues himself. Like, is it me? You know, like Pyongyang building the biggest stadium in the world for no reason. Anyway, is this part of a wider pattern, or is Nottingham unique in its financial woes? I'm throwing it out to the Peanut Gallery.
I unfortunately did a bit of research earlier because I hate myself. Yeah. What UON is citing right now is the significant financial challenges, that's the quotation, that they use, facing the higher education sector as the reason for such large-scale cutbacks. And whilst, yes, higher education does face an existential threat in this country, and I'm sure we'll get onto that very soon, as we mentioned before on the show today, a lot of unnecessary mistakes were made by previous and present administrations at the university. But the reputation of UON could plausibly tank. As we've mentioned, some professors have lobbied for students to rank the university poorly on the National Student Survey, which is key to things such as league tables, which I'm sure we all spent hours studying when we were in our A-levels.
Oh, so that's one other thing for our commenter earlier, who said, is there anything else we can do? What was that student survey?
The National Student Survey is one of the key things that goes into forming UON's position on league tables, okay. Which a lot of students blindly use to pick.
So, I mean, if you ever happen to stumble across that website, then you can really let the university administration know what you think.
And UON cites, quote, decreasing student numbers, particularly international students, as part of the reasons. That latter is likely going to raise from things like Brexit and government policy. That's made bringing international students whose tuition fees produce a net profit difficult.
A huge net profit.
However, the government have agreed to rejoin Erasmus from 2027. That will increase the number of short-term European students coming to UK universities and may, who knows, because who knows who's leading the polls, may lead to more deals loosening restrictions around international students coming to the UK. However, the potential reputation hit, if you ask me, means that the university may not appeal as much as it did before Brexit happened in 2020. So in 5 years, I think if we're not careful, it could look like a shell of its former globally recognised self. These myopic cuts to staff and closing centuries-old courses, some of the best in the UK in their fields, has the potential to do a remarkable amount of irreversible damage to UON that executives have not taken correct note of. Despite warnings from the UCU in their counter proposal, which you can read, it's 127 pages, don't read it all, around other unions, analysts treating individuals, courses and disciplines as notes on a spreadsheet sets a dangerous precedent that could sterilise education, which has already faced commodification, as Lottie said, and mechanisation. UON could develop a reputation for being very impersonal, which is something that I never thought I'd say about it, and very robotic, and just simply churning out graduates into third sector jobs at the cost of its soul.
Because I think that is a really sad thing, because something that my mum picked up on in particular when I was sort of deciding which uni I'd go to was she was saying, like, you always hear good things about UON. Like, with Nottingham, a few of my sister's friends went there, like, we just knew a few people who went there, and they all said, oh my God, it's amazing. It is an amazing university.
I told someone I was going to UON and they were like, oh my god, my son went there. Absolutely gushed, was so literally complimentary of it.
That was always the reaction to
UON. The only
reason
I'm here is because my physics teacher didn't shut up about how amazing it is.
The reason I came here was because of a YouTube channel, actually. Focused on the one that Sam was on, actually.
Oh, right.
And this is how I recognize her and knew her. But it's focused on chemistry, and it's incredible. It's an absolutely incredible university, incredible faculty across the board, and it's being demolished, dismantled.
And the appeal of it for me was I looked at the history course and I saw essentially the diversity of the subjects being taught, the incredible breadth, and with the cutting of the staff, you're cutting those courses. I maybe wouldn't. I mean, because even then, like, I mean, not saying I could have made it to Oxford. I mean, no, I could not have, as was clear from my master's. Anyway, I didn't even bother applying to it because I saw the course and it looked so one track and so dull. It was literally like, you're going to study the Anglo-Saxons in the first term and then 1700s economics in the second term. I fear that UON risks becoming that.
I think it's like you touched a bit on, as we talked about, like our friends who went. I think, you know, talk about going down in the league tables, but the other reputational damage is when those parents who were so like complimentary of it, when they say to us, oh my god, how are you liking UON? And we go, oh, well, actually, you know, the soul's kind of gone.
It's not what it is.
What it was. That's the real reputational damage that will matter in the long run.
So it's like quite kind of soft, but
yeah, it's almost like soft versus hard power. Like the league tables are the hard power, and the sad parents who were really complimentary of it who now have that view crushed in their eyes.
Yeah.
That's like the kind of depressing soft power.
Yeah. No,
That kind of influence that people's thoughts on a place have lasts longer and far harder to change.
Definitely.
Yeah. Especially in negative
opinion. Number on a league table won't change that view, even if it does go up.
No, absolutely not. And especially not for all those sort of humanities. I mean, all courses are suffering, as someone in the comments rightly pointed out. STEM areas are absolutely affected.
I think the fact that nursing is being dropped.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that we have QMC on our doorstep and we're in an NHS crisis and they're scrapping nursing is absolutely insane.
They're actually, what the 600 academic staff at risk of redundancy, they're going for 158 plus in health sciences and medicine, which are you even paying attention?
Oh, we don't need it.
Bioscience.
We don't need doctors.
Yeah. Bioscience is 50 out of 110, 120 jobs are at risk that they want to flat out cut 50% more or less.
I mean, and not to make it super political, but if we're not training doctors and nurses here and then we're cracking down on immigration, we're all going to just die. Yeah. What's going to happen?
We are quite literally shooting ourselves in the foot with the sort of the old supply of doctors.
Well,
and the ones who are left over, they'll just go to Australia.
Instead of treating the infection after shooting ourselves in the foot, we're just letting it
gangrene. Oh, no, I don't have a doctor to treat it. Yeah. Well, on that light note, I think we'll take this wonderful strike special to a conclusion. I think all we can really say at the Pulse is stay hopeful, make sure you get signing petitions, make sure you talk to people, make sure you spread the word. I wish anyone listening the absolute best of luck if your degree is going to be affected. Pray for me and my posho pathway to LSE. Good Lord. I mean, who's really suffering here? My heart very much does go out to the teachers and students who will be affected.
And
so,
pray that none of us need a doctor in the future.
Quite so. So I think with that, I will say thank you to Jamie.
Thank you very much for having me, Rob.
Thank you to Ollie.
Thank you very much, Rob.
And thank you to Lottie for your first Pulse show. Thank you all very much. My name has been Rob O'Connor, and this is The Pulse.
Thank you for listening to URN's second special course cut broadcast. For more information on the university's proposals, visit our Instagram at URN1350.